Judd Apatow's TV credits read like one ahead-of-its-time show after another. He was the creator and executive producer of Undeclared, and one of the writers and producers on Freaks and Geeks. Before those series, he also was the co-creator and executive producer of The Ben Stiller Show and wrote for The Larry Sanders Show. Terry spoke with Judd Apatow in 2001 and asked him if he'd learned anything from his Freaks and Geeks experience.
One of the nice articles when Freaks and Geeks was canceled was written by Robert Lloyd in the LA Weekly, and it was basically a letter to Paul Feig and I saying, please don't think you made any mistakes and do not learn anything from this situation. Make no adjustments in your future. And I've tried to listen to that. That was a very unique situation because at the time Paul Feig thought of that idea, his main concept was people are sick of all of these shows about handsome kids and their problems being written in the manner of a 45-year-old man. And so we thought, well, this can be an anecdote to all of those shows because it will be funny and it will be more truthful to what actually happens when you're a kid. And we thought it would go through the roof. We thought, you know, we were up against Cops on Saturday Night. How can we not win? And one of the lessons we learned was America loves Cops. That was the first lesson. Then they moved us to Tuesday, and we learned America loves That 70s Show. But we knew we were going to get canceled very early in our production season, and the only thing that was preventing us from being canceled immediately was this enormous mountain of press begging them not to cancel us. So we shot a final episode in the middle of the season because we knew any day we could get the call. So we shot it early. So if they canceled us today, we've already shot some sort of conclusion to this story. And as a result of the fact that we knew we would probably go down, we didn't really take any notes from the network or make any adjustments. And we really followed our hearts about where the show should go. And it became more of our personal art project. I used to say to Paul all the time, this show is being made right now for its cable run and for showings in the Museum of Broadcasting. It's not really being made for NBC. And that turned out to be true. And a year later, they ran it on the Fox Family Channel. And they ran it every week in order. And the ratings were very, very high. Whereas on NBC, we were only on 12 out of 26 weeks. So there was really no way for the audience to find the show and get into a rhythm with our storyline. That doesn't mean it would have been a hit, because it still might not have been. But we didn't really get a shot to find an audience for a unique show.
You did a comedy show on your high school radio station, and from what I've read, it sounds like you interviewed a lot of comics for the show, and name comics like Steve Allen and Jay Leno, maybe before Jay Leno was famous, but mm-hmm. still, what was it like trying to get professionals to be interviewed by you, a high school kid, for your high school radio show? It wasn't exactly going to sell a lot of tickets to their gigs or get them a lot of national attention.
They did the interviews because I was calling publicists from New York, and I would say I work for WKWZ Radio, and I would never say it was a high school station, and I would trick them into giving me a half an hour with their client. Then I would show up with a tape recorder that was from the AV department and was like an enormous boom box and at Jerry Seinfeld's apartment or whatever. And it was basically an excuse for me to meet people that I looked up to and have 45 minutes to say, how do you do it? It was just my instruction manual. I didn't air most of the interviews. I just kept them for myself. But it was an amazing time, and I was so driven to do this. I think it was because my parents had gotten divorced, and it was a time of a lot of drama in my family, and I had to find something to distract myself and also a way to survive in this world because I lost a sense of safety. So I decided to interview these people I liked and become a comedian using this information. So I interviewed Seinfeld and Harry Anderson. I interviewed most of the writers from Saturday Night Live, like Franken and Davis and Michael O'Donoghue and James Downey. I interviewed Guido Sarducci and John Candy, Harry Shearer, and I did get an enormous amount of information that was very helpful, and most of them were nice, and it only made me want to do what I thought I wanted to do more.
How old were you when you started doing stand-up?
I was 17. I started during my senior year of high school on Long Island at the East Side Comedy Club.
What kind of jokes were you doing?
I remember I used to say to the audience, I don't know how to handle hecklers, so I like to practice, so if anyone would like to heckle me, please do it now. And then the entire audience would start screaming and cursing at me, and then I would say, yeah, see, I got nothing. I would do jokes like that. I had a lot of jokes about how bad I was. I would finish my act by saying, you know, Jerry Lewis said, you don't learn how to be funny by getting laughs. You only learn how to be funny by not getting laughs. And I have received a college education tonight.
How did you start writing for other comics?
I was known as someone who had a good act, and I don't think I was a very good performer. So people would just say, do you want to write jokes for me? And I was looking for some other income. So I started selling jokes to a ventriloquist here, people that are nothing like me, as a way to make some extra money. And then at some point, Gary Shandling signed on to do the Grammys, and someone recommended to him that I could write music jokes. So he called me while I was on the road at the Dallas Improv and said, do you want to write jokes? And I said, yes. And then I stayed up till 4 in the morning writing jokes and sent him like 12 pages of jokes, like 100 jokes the next day. And he liked a lot of them, and we became friends, and he used me for the Grammys a few more times and eventually hired me to work for the Larry Sanders Show. But that's the kind of thing I would do when I was starting out. If someone needed jokes, I would write 100 jokes. I would always do way more than was necessary as a way to prove that I could do it. And I always try to inspire the writers on my show with stories like that, because it is what it takes to succeed in a business where a lot of people are trying to get in.
You've had to direct, particularly in Freaks and Geeks, actors who are very young and don't have a lot of experience. What are some of the things you learned about how to work with young, inexperienced actors who are very talented, but it's not like they've done this a lot before?
When it comes to young actors, it really just depends on the person. The kids on Freaks and Geeks were very prepared when they came to work every day. They had an enormous amount of ideas, and they were very comfortable in their own skin and with their parts. So they didn't have to reach too deep to get where they had to go within a scene. And if I gave them space and let something naturally happen between the young people, I sound like Jerry Lewis now, then hopefully something magical would happen. And how I tend to do that is to shoot two cameras all the time, allow the kids to go off page if they feel like it, and try to capture a real moment.
Can you give us an example of that?
When we shot the pilot, for example, Jay Baruchel had to kiss this girl he has a crush on. So instead of choreographing a makeout scene, I just said, okay, we're going to put two cameras on you and make out. And they were very awkward and uncomfortable, which they needed to be for the show. And she starts unbuttoning his shirt, and Jay got very nervous, and he didn't know what to do. So he started undoing the strap on her shoe. And it's really sweet and funny, and it's exactly what Jay would do in life. And it's my favorite moment on the show. It's just a little choice, but it's something that I never would have thought of.
Does it make you feel really good and maybe even a little victorious to see the kid who really thinks of himself as a geek and is really kind of awkward and not handsome by, you know, model standards, kissing the girl, and he really likes this girl a lot, and she likes him, and she's smart and attractive. Does that make you feel good?
On the show? I mean, for me,
I mean, to see that and to have created it, you know, as opposed to like two fashion models kissing each other.
I guess, you know, the point of it all for me is that I always felt like this geeky kid in high school who would one day have his day. And I always thought, this isn't my time. One day I'll have my time. One day people will appreciate my interests and what I'm really about. It doesn't matter that I'm bad at sports, because when you're 30, no one cares if you're good at softball. And now I have done well. I'm proud of the work I've done. I married a beautiful woman and had a beautiful child. And I like letting that kid get the girl, because he deserves the girl. It doesn't mean it's not going to be an enormous struggle. And occasionally as a child, I did get the girl. But I'm proud to let the geeks win every once in a while.
Writer-producer Judd Apatow speaking with Terry Gross in 2001. Freaks and Geeks, the short-lived TV show on which he collaborated with series creator Paul Feig, will be released on DVD April 6th. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.